All right, everybody, we'll go ahead and start the June 30th, 2020 budget workshop for the Stevensville Town Council. The record should reflect that all council members are in attendance along with administrative staff. So this was an alternate meeting date. If you remember, our original meeting calendar called for this date as an alternate budget adoption date. And then if you remember, halfway through the process, we bumped budget adoption to July 9th. So today is our last attempt at a workshop. We've done some considerable fine-tuning of the budget over the last week. In fact, I'm rather excited about this budget. Some opportunities presented themselves. Funding was able to be allocated correctly to correct the deficit that we originally discussed when we first started these conversations. We have a better idea now of some of our most of our revenue projections in terms of what we can anticipate for tax revenue. We don't have an exact tax revenue number still, and as you recall. Let me switch mics here. If you recall, the taxable valuations aren't due until or won't be released until August 6th. However, we did get a firm number on entitlement shares and on gas tax and a number of other things. So the revenues you're going to see in the budget are sound revenues. We think we can rely on these numbers. If August 6th comes and what they project for a mill value is significantly lower than what we have in our budget, we're prepared to come back to the table and address those deficiencies. Our hope, though, is that number comes in higher than what we're projecting. We're projecting taxable growth right now at 6%, so which last year was 13. I'll go ahead and pass out some documents for you all. Let's start with where we are today. This first packet for you is more or less for informational purposes. It is the expenditure versus actual report for fiscal year 2020, which officially ends today. Okay, today's the last day of the fiscal year. Tomorrow we start back at zero. So the first packet I handed out was the expenditure report. The second page is the revenue report as to where we are to date with revenues. So we'll focus on revenues first, because I just want to give you an update. There is one check, or one more tax check that's due to the town of Stevensville that typically comes in July but is receivable for June, so that is going to basically finish off our year. But you can see the percent received and where we are. We're 81% received on all revenues. So what that tells us is there were some areas where we underestimated, and there were some areas where if you look at the percentages, there's some areas, for example, the planning fund, that we brought in way more revenue than we thought we would based on planning activity. So keep that in mind, that those funds that rely on taxes, are those percentages are going to be slightly lower because of the final tax check. So when tax bills come out, we get a big chunk of money in November, a big chunk of money in December, because that's when people pay their first half of their taxes. And then January, February, March, April, May, we get smaller checks because of the way people pay their taxes, and then they pay their second half in June and July, and so then that's when we get our bigger checks, okay? So that's why our revenue to be received looks low today, but we're in a solid financial position in terms of what revenue has been received. Questions?
Looking here at Fund 7120, The fireman's disability says that we haven't received anything as far as that.
And that's one of those last minute accounting things that goes in. So Robert will, that's a direct deposit into our account. Robert will track that down when Sabres sends us the receipt that they've deposited that funding. There's some reports that are due before they'll deposit the check. And then once that comes in. So that's why I say there will be some last minute adjustments to this, but the fact that we're 81% at this point is encouraging. So.
Airport funding is a big one.
Oh, yes, the airport fund. So when we send billing out, we usually receive our billing, or we'll send our billing out, and it's usually due July 1st. So as that money comes in, it's going to be coded back to this fiscal year. That's another piece as well. So that'll make up some of that revenue in that fund where you see it's only 66%, right?
39 for the for the project fund. Oh, 39, that's 120 we haven't got because the project is just taking longer. And so those funds will come in when they come in.
Yeah, so there are funds that are receivable in this fiscal year, but we won't receive the physical check until in July or August, but we will code the revenue back into this fiscal year because that's when we should have, that's when the work was performed for those expenses, the related expenses. So there is work being performed at the airport that we will receive reimbursement from FAA on that will be coded to this chart as well. Mr. Michelson?
Do you want to explain the building code enforcement?
Why it's 122%?
Yes.
We underestimated how much revenue we would receive from different projects and the building activity. So we thought we would only receive $110,000 in revenue, and we received $134,000. So we received substantially more money than we thought we would in building fees. And some of that is related to the school project. Those fees were more than we thought they would be. The other thing there, you'll see an adjustment between the building fund and the planning fund because there's a 5% plan review fee that goes towards the planning fund. But when the check is coded into our cash receiving system, it only puts it in the building fund. So you'll see some adjustments there. So this is more or less just to kind of give you a picture, a snapshot, if you will. As we get through July, you're going to see more firm numbers. Ms. Devlin?
No.
Oh, okay. Switching then to, Ms. Maxson, excuse me.
How are we doing on the lighting districts, Robert? Or, of course, I remember last year, weren't you guys over some dang thing and you had to take money out? Or
you mean in terms of cash?
Yeah, as far as what's in the lighting district's accounts.
Well,
they're a mess, or?
Well, we can get into lighting districts in the budget because there's a breakdown.
There's a breakdown, yeah.
In there. I mean, we know that more lighting district money comes when the next tax check comes because lighting districts are funded through assessments and taxes. Mm-hmm. So these lighting districts will see their revenue complete when that last tax check comes in. But when we get into the revenue portion of the budget, you will see assessments for all the lighting districts. In order, because in some districts we were spending cash down because we had been keeping too much cash in those accounts. And now we've spent it down, and so we're going to levy assessments to pay the light bills.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Then, as we finish out the fiscal year, the statement of expenditure versus a budget versus actual report, we look very healthy in terms of expenditures. Of course, there are always bills that come in July that we need to pay from June's money. So this is not a complete picture. But if you look at the overall budget, there are two numbers I'd like to bring to your attention. One is the general fund, where as of today, we've underspent $125,000, okay? Meaning we did not spend that money. We only spent 83% of the budget. And then if you look at the entire budget on the last page, we've only spent 67% of the entire budget. So we're carrying just shy of $1 million into the new fiscal year. Of money that we did not spend that we planned on spending. Organization-wide, we fared very well. You'll see areas where we're, you know, At or under expenditures, there were a couple spots in our lighting districts where we exceeded expenditures just because we underestimated what the light bill would be. And there were some adjustments to some lighting bills through our LED conversion. So the LED conversion came through, and there were a few bills, particularly Creekside Meadows for some reason, that we had been overcharged for one light in one district and undercharged for another light in another district, and the bills became very cumbersome, and so that is partially what led us in some overruns in some certain districts, is because we had to balance those things out and make sure that the people paid for the lights that were in their district. So, but because of the conversion and the LED audit, we were able to straighten those things out and correct them. So, otherwise, I think there's no outstanding issues necessarily when you look at the budget, and there will be some things that we do correct. We jump into some coding errors when you see some giant numbers leap out, you know, we're at 500% of an item or something like that. It's likely a coding error where somebody's fingers just got too fast. So we'll take a look at those. But we just printed this off this evening. I wanted you guys to be able to take a look at it. So with that information, we were able to, you know, proceed into building the preliminary budget, which you'll review tonight. And we will make any last-minute modifications to, so that we can publish it tomorrow. We have published the public notice for public hearing on the preliminary budget. That will hit the paper tomorrow. It will publish 2 weeks, and then we will do a public hearing and bring the budget forward for adoption on July 9th. So walking through the preliminary budget, there are a couple things I want to bring to your attention from our previous meetings. The budget still implements the wages and salaries matrix that we originally proposed. We haven't necessarily been able to compile a comprehensive report that I think Ms. Holcomb was looking for in terms of comparisons between other job descriptions and other communities. I can tell you, though, and reiterate that when we built the salaries and wages matrix, which is not included in your packet tonight, it was given to you separately, and will be included in the final budget. The salaries and wages matrix, when we built that matrix, we considered the job descriptions of our organization compared to the job descriptions of other organizations of our size, what they were expected to do, and then what the market rate in our region was for that work. The change we did make to the salaries and wages schedule was as we adjusted the public works supervisor up 20 cents an hour. So the council had expressed concern that that wage was not moving from 1 year to the next. So there's a 20 cent increase to that position, and that affected we made that applicable to the entire matrix for that position specifically, so that it was fair. So if any other employee found themselves in that position at that exact time, they would receive that same wage. That was an aim, like I said, to address some concerns around that wage. Everything else remains static as that's proposed. The other change that, and we do have some updated, I think Robert provided some updated spreadsheets for you folks to show the difference hourly wise. So the first sheet I'll give you is that sheet you're familiar with. The second one outlines the allocations of those positions. So, like I said, you'll note that the public works supervisor It was raised 20 cents. We left everything else alone because in the preliminary budget, we can afford everything we're asking for. Here are the changes, just to kind of highlight, because I don't necessarily want to bore you in going through the entire document page by page by page. You're all intelligent individuals, and I won't insult you by reading it to you. The major changes since our last meeting are the wage correction, and then moving appropriation authority out of the capital improvement fund and into the general fund. As you see from the expenditure versus actual report, we're finishing the year off with a healthy surplus, where we're projecting a significant general fund balance. Rather than moving that funding into capital improvements, that excess into capital improvements, where it's limited to be spent on items over $5,000 and a five-year useful life, we instead brought down some estimates of some work that needs to be done. One example would be the lighting in the fire station. When we proposed lighting in the fire station, we coupled that with lighting in the entire building that hadn't already been upgraded to LEDs. We're taking a step back and just going for the lighting in the fire station, which is only a $3,700 bill, which we can't capitalize. So that expenditure doesn't qualify for Fund 4000, so we left funding in the general fund in order to make that appropriation or to make that expenditure happen. And so we're spending down some of our surplus in the general fund purposefully on projects that don't necessarily meet the capital expenditure level. And the reason for that is we're moving money out of, we're moving expenditures that would ordinarily occur in the capital improvements fund into the general funds to make some wiggle room in the capital improvements fund for some swimming pool repairs. As you've probably seen or been made aware, the swimming pool does have some damage to it when we filled it this spring. Let me back up. We rehabbed the pool. We repaired some sections that needed some repair with concrete and paint. And when we filled it, those repairs didn't hold. We're leaking in the range, roughly, about 6 inches a day of water out of that pool. I don't know how that equates to gallons, but it's significant, where they have to leave a valve on 24/7 in order to keep the pool at a reasonable level. That's why we're only staying open through July 25th. July 25th, we'll shut the pool down and plan for some sort of repair or reconstruction of the swimming pool at some level. Ms. Holcomb?
Just remember that pool was grandfathered in the way it is. You do too much, then you're going to have it inspected and be approved, because they, right now, it will not pass.
Correct.
And it was grandfathered in, so.
Yes, we're aware of that, and we believe that it's irresponsible to continue to run a facility that doesn't meet the appropriate codes that it should meet. Every single year, as long as I've been involved in pool inspections, we've scraped by the inspection. We had to have the suction, which is a homemade suction for the pump, engineer stamped in order to keep our pool open. So I realize that if we do any significant work to the swimming pool itself, that we're going to have to bring it up to code, but bringing things up to code isn't a bad philosophy, because really, it's not up to code, it's down to code. The lowest the bar can get is the code, right? Anything above that is better. And so, in the interest of keeping the facility open for the community, we'd like to invest some money into working with our engineers and architect to figure out what's the best solution for that pool. The best solution for the pool may be a simple liner. That may be all it needs, is some sort of a liner to keep the concrete from leaking. Or the areas that are leaking may need to just be filled in, and we may, right now the kiddie pool is our worst offender in leakage. The rest of the pool is in decent shape. it may be that we rebuild a kiddie pool someplace adjacent to the pool and expand the facility that way. We don't know what it looks like. There's a lot of ideas, of course. There's a lot of concerns, of course. But we'd like to allocate some funding and reserve some funding in the capital improvements fund for an eventual repair of that swimming pool. And unfortunately, there's two pieces to why we're closing on July 25th. One is construction can only happen during a certain time of year, right? And that's typically summer. We can't really do construction on the swimming pool over the winter because of the groundwork. So, you know, that gives us August and September and part of October to really do any construction if we need to, and we will use the next month to develop whatever plans necessary and keep council in the loop as to how we plan to address the issue. The other reason that we're closing early is because it's very expensive to operate a pool that's just limping along. In fact, I would argue the part of the reason that, or part of the reason our costs at the swimming pool on an annual basis are so high is because it doesn't meet code. Whereas by the time the water hits the sensors for the chlorine, we've probably already put too much chlorine in the water. And so we're just dumping chlorine down the drain because it cannot circulate fast enough. That pool's just it's too much water, not enough pump and not enough pipe. So those are issues that we need to address, you know, for sanitary reasons, for sure. So there's just a whole number of facets to this that we want to consider as we approach it. It's not going to be as soon as you would approve the budget, we're going to demolish the swimming pool because that's irresponsible. We're going to take a very methodical approach to this problem. But of course, this problem came up since our last meeting, right? It's evolved very quickly. And, you know, in fact, depending on how this week plays out, we may not be able to run the pool through July 25th. We may have to close it earlier due to COVID-19. So we're taking it a day at a time. We're trying to find long-term solutions for that facility. I know that it's been a topic of conversation for decades as to what does this future of the swimming pool look like for Stevensville, and does it, you know, what happens? So with that consideration, that's why we've rearranged, if you will, some of those expenditures and placed that burden back into the general fund, where the general fund can support it. Like I said, with the heavy and healthy surplus that we've seen through this fiscal year, that we feel like that's the most responsible approach. This budget, at our last meeting, you asked us to go back to the drawing board in terms of funding for two primary issues. One was the door at the fire station, the expansion, and the other was a storage building at the Public Works facility. Neither of those items are in this budget today because we haven't fully researched. Of course, it's only been a week, mind you. We haven't fully put together a plan as to how those things are going to be paid for. And frankly, we prioritized the swimming pool over those two issues. Believe it or not, that was the decision I made. Because we don't know the full picture on what facility improvements look like in terms of those other two issues. So it doesn't mean that those items are not going to happen. It means that we're going to look for funding sources outside of our regular budget to make those things, or to see that those things are accomplished, and they are being prioritized in order to see some movement on those two pieces. They are priority projects for the town. They didn't meet the same priority as what we thought the swimming pool should be at this time. So when you don't see those items, don't think that they're not going to happen. It's that they are not being funded at this time. Now, that being said, if we see that we underestimated the amount of tax revenue we're receiving, then there's an opportunity for some funding to come open. And I don't know what that number will look like. A number of grants are being researched, and financing is being researched for some of those improvements with the building and the fire station door. So just keep those things in mind. The other thing that was removed from the capital improvements budget was the third dump truck for the Public Works Department. We are still paying for a sander that is desperately needed. We need to make sure the streets are sanded in the winter, and that sander is no longer useful to us. And so we are replacing the sander, but I feel that our Public Works Department can keep up with the work that needs to be done in terms of the dump truck work, if you will, with the two dump trucks that are being serviced right now. We have three in our fleet right now. George would like to decommission one and replace it with a new one for $70,000. We've removed that from the budget for the same reasons I've explained previously in terms of the door and the swimming pool issues. So we think with two solid trucks, we can still get the work done that we need to get done, especially provided there's four people at any given time working. So, you know, the odds of having all three trucks running at one time, frankly, only happened during our fall cleanup, because there's one person in the backhoe or a bobcat picking up debris, and then three others running trucks around town to clean up the debris. So for a week out of the year, that third dump truck is very useful to us. The other 51 weeks out of the year, it sits idle. So whether we keep it around or not is yet to be seen, but at this time we're not planning to replace it for now. That summarizes the capital changes to the budget. There's one other change to the general fund budget that I'm proposing this evening, and that is a relocation of the police department into another facility. The Highway Patrol, this early winterish at some point, moved out of Stevensville to another facility and left their space vacant here in Stevensville. That space is set up for law enforcement services. It's not been re-rented, it's not being utilized currently, and it was leased to the Highway Patrol at $1,000 per month. I'd like to propose that the police department occupy that space to allow for more space in town hall for the administration to spread out a little bit. And those who have experienced our current office dynamics understand why it's important that we spread out, especially given the pandemic being what it is, but we feel that that facility would adequately serve the personnel. You know, we have roughly five people at any given time working for the police department, and that facility is enough square footage to serve them. It's more than what they have today. It's still publicly accessible and handicap accessible, so you know, renovations would be limited to public service window for the police clerk, but outside of that, the space is pretty much ready to go. So this budget includes the $12,000 a year to occupy a space, and plus any modest increases in utilities it would take to make that happen. And so that is a move we'd like to make as soon as we possibly can, given that the council consents to that. I will tell you, you know, yes, that is a $12,000 hit to the general fund budget. And so, you know, that was a bit of a pill to swallow. We reevaluated the police department's budget and found that there are some items that we can delay the purchase of. In fact, the police department was lucky enough, I suppose, to receive a substantial donation from a private citizen that they can utilize to make some purchases that ordinarily would have been in their budget. And there are a lot of one-time things in there, radio replacements and that type of thing. So we think that the $12,000 impact plus utilities, of course, and mind you, the police department was paying utilities to some degree already. But we feel like we've been able to massage those numbers into the general fund budget, and we did that before we added the capital expenditures into the budget. So we know that our operational costs are being covered by the revenue being brought in by the town. So we're not committing operational costs to a carryover. We're committing operational costs to revenue. And then the carryover is covering those one-time expenditures that are outside of the regular operation. Ms. Devlin.
Would if that were to happen, instead of spending $6,800 on an office for Bobby, for Public Works, could we save that and have him move into one of those areas?
Yes, we're still weighing that, and so that's why you'll still see the spending appropriation in Bobby's budget for an office space for him. Because eventually we would like to have an office at the park for Parks and Recreation, just so he can hold staff meetings and those other things there. So, but we do think in the short term that we can make the space in the rest of that facility for Bobby. And for whatever other staff we need to move around. Of course, we'll have more room up front as well, given Janelle would move over with the police facility as well. I lied. That wasn't the only addition to your budget. But if you want to just focus on that for now, that's fine. I guess, no, you need to understand. So part of the other reason why space is an issue is, as you know, we had an employee who needed to quarantine previous to a medical procedure, so we brought on a temp to fill her place for a couple of weeks to keep us going on the workload at the counter. We've realized the value of having that extra set of hands is extremely beneficial. We've also realized that especially through this budgeting process, that the finance position is extremely overworked right now, as am I, but that's part of the nature of our jobs. We realize that, but Robert hasn't really been able to get hands-on on this budget or to do a thorough job on the AFR and financial statements because of a lot of the data entry work that he's doing to get the bills entered, to get payroll done, to do all those very simple data entry type tasks. What this budget proposes is 4 days a week of administrative secretarial help in the front office so that we can pull Laura away from that front counter. A lot of her time is interrupted at that counter, and it's very beneficial to have one person at that counter, but Laura's skills could be better used assisting Robert with some of that data entry rather than up and down answering phones and handling the counter work all day. So we'd like to bring a fourth person into the office simply from that receptionist role. That's included in this budget at 4 days a week. It's not a full-time position.
Another position?
Correct, in the administration.
Wow.
Mr. Bitt.
I remember the other day when I brought you that paperwork from State Parks.
Mm-hmm.
Was Bobby able to find out anything as far as getting some funding for the pool from the state?
That's still something that, you know, the situation is evolving so fast, and, Bobby's he just got the pool open on Monday, so I think he's probably taken a look at it, but frankly, he and I haven't had a chance to sit down and really, what is today in the first place? It's only Tuesday. We haven't had a chance to discuss what you left him, but
yeah, I just didn't know if it was if we had found whether or not registrations were closed for that. So
yeah, I don't know. And that's the thing is that we are, you know, in terms of the swimming pool, we are going to continue to find other funding sources for that as well. But worst case scenario, we need to pay for it, right? And so, you know, if we find funding sources that will offset what we were willing to commit to the project, then we're going to commit the funding otherwise back to the projects that didn't make the cut this year and that are still being evaluated for other funding. So there's a whole gamut of, of course, funding sources we're aware of. Part of the problem, I mean, to your point, Dempsey, is that, you know, we always talk about this, but we never actually implement it, is having our finance person dedicated to seeking those grant opportunities and having the time to do so. We could think of a list of things we'd like to have Robert do, but there just simply isn't enough daylight in the day to get it all done for him. I mean, he spends a considerable amount of time doing data entry into our software system, which he should. As a finance officer for an organization of our size, our hope would be that he can make, you know, be looking at the higher level picture for Stevensville rather than working on data entry. I'd rather pay someone a much lower wage to do data entry than to pay someone at Robert's wage to do data entry. And I think Robert would prefer not to do data entry. Mr. Michelson.
I've got to say, Mr. Dewey, I'm pretty overwhelmed by all this. You're making some of the biggest wages this town has ever seen. We're adding squad cars, now we're adding a building over there, we're adding another part-time person. We're doing it in one of the world's most biggest pandemics, and a second wave is coming. I just don't think it's fiscally responsible for us to be doing making all these additions to a town, and especially the wage increases. I mean, we need to make some cuts here, guys. He could wish for the moon.
Can you turn your microphone?
Can you turn your microphone on, Mr. Michelson, please?
Yeah.
I think we as a council, we have to seriously think about making some more cuts here, guys, because as you well know, Mayor Dewey and all of them, they mean well and everything, and they can ask for the moon. But it comes down to us. And I just think if we send this message to this town with all this wish list, man, there's gonna be a lot coming down on us. So I really think we should really get our heads together here and think about what we're doing. Because if we just pass this the way it is, wow. Thank you.
Ms. Devlin.
So I think it's really beneficial, and we heard a lot of this when we had our meeting on the Friday. I think Mr. Vick and I were able to be there. And we talked to a lot of the department heads about why these things that we're seeing in this budget are important, how it will enable them to do their job more efficiently, more safety, things like that. It's our job to listen to our department heads. It's our job to listen to the staff. They know what they need better than we know what they need. I think sometimes our role gets misplaced in that. If we don't trust our department heads to make the right decisions and asking for what they need, not for what they want, they shouldn't be in those positions. I think it's that simple. Robert, I'm gonna ask you point blank, do you need help?
Yeah.
Are you overworked?
I can work every day.
So that's not, yeah, that's not a request that is over the moon. Okay, is any of this going to cost our taxpayers more money?
We are not, no, we are not projecting an increase in taxes. We're not suggesting a mill increase,
okay.
No.
And we actually are saving money this year, and the rumor that's going around is that we're spending way more and that we're going to go bankrupt. That is not the case.
That's correct. We are nowhere near bankruptcy.
So I kind of piggybacked off of what Mr. Michelson brought last week. Dempsey brought a good point up that there's not really any apple-to-apple comparisons that we can do with our mayor, with our staff in job descriptions. This town has done a really good job on doing a great job with a little amount of money. At some point, that model doesn't work. We have a burnout rate. We don't get things accomplished. It doesn't work. So going back to what Mr. Vick had said, when we look at the community of Stevensville, it's 2,000 people. But this is actually quite an active and booming, growing community. So I took that information and I made some phone calls myself. And for what we're requiring our staff to do, you are underpaid. I'm sorry, but you are. Even it goes back to what I said all along this matrix, you are underpaid. Furthermore, I don't think we can kid ourselves and get away with saying that this position of the mayor is part-time. I know as well as everybody sitting in this room that our mayor works 40 plus hours a week. I know that. So at the current rate that he's being paid at $1,000 a month salary, that's $5.77 an hour. That's embarrassing. And anybody that sits here that says it's not, I'm sorry, but you're not going to work for $5.77 an hour. At the proposed rate of $1,700 a month at 40 hours a week, that's $9.81 an hour. That's still extremely embarrassing when a lot of what we hear is that he's a part-time employee. this isn't getting done, that's not getting done, why isn't this, we want him at our beck and call and don't understand why that doesn't happen. There comes a point when people are overworked and they have to say, I can't do anymore. In this budget, there are options to alleviate our mayor's time, that he can focus on those things, so we won't hear, I don't have time to do it. We won't hear, why didn't that get done? Things will actually get done. So what I actually propose, going off the phone calls I made, is that the mayor position be raised to $2,000 a month. That allows $11.54 an hour, which I still think is embarrassing for any mayor in the situation that we're in. I appreciate you laughing. That's fine. But that's also very rude.
She wasn't laughing.
Let's,
I was not laughing at you.
There was, nobody was laughing.
Okay, let's stand task. Thanks.
But that's what I'm proposing. I think it's fair. Actually, I don't think it's fair. Let me make that clear. I do not think that is a fair salary. But I think that it's long overdue. And I think it's a good starting point.
Okay. Ms. Holcomb.
In all these meetings, I never said that the employees shouldn't get a raise. I think the raises should be straight across, because there is a lot of stuff. I'm not saying we just stop because of all this COVID-19, but there's a lot of places that aren't going to give their employees raises. With the mayor's salary, if you end up getting to one of the classes in Bozeman, you're going to hear from other mayors that make considerably less. Considerably less. And with the same amount of people. It has never been made a full-time position. I mean, I hear other mayors that have a full-time job, plus doing the mayor job, plus doing this, and they seem to be able to get it taken care of. It just really scares me that we're spending $154,000 more in wages, well, a total difference of $166,000 and some change, when we don't know what's going to be coming down the pipeline. I mean, we don't know if the governor's going to close us back down. I don't know what's going to happen there. And I don't know how much the pool's going to need for fixed. I know one mayor, and I want to say Lima. Do you remember that, Councilmember Michelson? Was it Lima where they actually got a pool for nothing because they raised the money and they it might be something to look into.
74-year-old mayor.
So I mean when you're hearing other mayors laughing because we're, like last year when he wanted $32,000 a year, they're like, we don't make that much. And they've been there for years and years and years. I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I understand you have a family. But I just think with everything that's going on, all these things that you want to do, I think it's beneficial if we did a raise, then it just went straight across, like I said, and then we talk about the metric system next year if things get better, hopefully. And I was on board with giving the police the corporal. I was on board with that. And we had Mr. Marble saying that he would forego his raises if we approved with the corporal, but I am willing to give him a raise as well. I'm just thinking, I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I mean, we're already getting flooded with everybody supposedly, you know, getting sick, and I just don't want to do all this, and then all of a sudden we have no money.
So I would like, and I, let me be very clear, I am not, it's not my intent to argue with you, Ms. Holcomb, but there are a couple points I'd like to clarify. If I can have you guys just turn to the page is marked 20. I don't think it's actually the 20th page. I think our page numbers are slightly off. But if you go to the page marked 20, it's the fiscal year 2021 financial summary. And it breaks the preliminary budget down by the general fund, the special revenue funds, capital projects, enterprise funds, fiduciary funds, and then all funds combined. What you can see there is the amount of funding, whether it's an increase or decrease in fund balance and working capital, meaning are we spending cash down in any specific section of funds. We've already acknowledged that, yes, we are spending cash down. And I think part of the reason we're allowed to get away with spending down that cash is because we've been incredibly responsible with taxpayers' dollars over the last fiscal year. I mean, being underspent, as of today, underspent $125,000, that's unheard of. It's been a long time since I think this organization has seen that kind of success. And there were a lot of variables, of course, that played into that. COVID-19 being one of them, not having a budget halfway through the fiscal year being another, reason why we were seriously underspent. But it put us in a position to, I think, seize some opportunities. So when you look at this, if you just consider, let's just take a step back, right? The council is at this 40,000 foot level, maybe even higher, and they're looking at the whole global picture. I'd like to bring your attention to the far right-hand column. Our projected beginning fund balance, and mind you, this is a conservative balance because the general fund is still a little bit in flux, and we anticipate the general fund will end with a higher balance than what we're listing here. So we're saying in all funds combined that we're starting the year with $3.6 million. Our revenues are just over $4 million. We plan to spend $4.2 million. And both those numbers include the airport project, which is nearly $2 million. In total, then, we're spending down $373,000. Out of $3.6 million, you're dropping your fund balances $373,000. A third of that is your wages, if you want to look at it that way. So you're going to end the year, and we joke about this a little bit in the office, but any time a member of the public or even a council member, and you've probably heard Robert say this, whenever you ask him, what is the balance at the bank, what does he tell you? $3.4 million. That's typically how much money we always have in the bank, $3.4 million. We're at $3.371, and that doesn't include some revenue we still anticipate to get from our last tax check of the year. So I don't know how to say, I'll put it to you in these terms. If I can manage my household on a $12,000 a year salary plus whatever my wife makes in her position, and do so successfully and still have a reasonable lifestyle that I can appreciate, then I think we're doing well at the town's level as well. Because there's no difference. I implement the same strategies that I implement in my household in saving funding. I do that here. We're very successful in how we manage our money. And I hear the rumors, this department's been over budget 3 years in a row. Baloney. Prove it. Show me the documents that say that the police department was over budget 3 years in a row. It's not in this document I gave you tonight. So, I don't know what piece of paper I need to put in front of everyone that says that, no, we're not anywhere near bankruptcy. I mean, if you want to see what a city looks like, it just happened. Right? Browning. Browning just experienced that. County took it over. Okay? There were 126 municipalities. Now there's an even 125. So, that was 3 or 4 years ago was all. So we know what bankruptcy looks like for a municipality. We can see the writing on the wall. That is not what Stevensville is experiencing. We saw 13% tax growth last year. We're projecting a conservative 6% tax growth. Yes, COVID-19 is going to affect our income, but we do not rely on sales tax in this community like other communities do. We don't necessarily see the influx that other communities are going to see because our tax base is so small and dense. Right, it's not as diverse as other communities. And in terms of taxes, frankly, it takes a while for it to catch up with us, right? I mean, we're always a fiscal year ahead where the legislature appropriates gas tax funding. Our gas tax money isn't going to go down this year. It'll go up again, and then, the next year is probably when we'll see the dip in gas tax because of COVID-19. In the dovetail of COVID-19, when we talk about staff workload and productivity and how much we get done, and this is where I want to tell you, please, when you consider the salary of the mayor, do not consider who's in that position. Leave me out of it. Okay? Do not say it's Brandon Dewey getting a raise, because it's not. It's the mayor who gets a raise. Think about what you expect of that person, what you expect of the organization as a whole and under that person's leadership, and consider the fact that you have an extremely green staff, okay? You have two very senior employees and a volunteer fire department head who's been around a while. Outside of that, I'm the next person with longevity in this organization. The next person in the main administrative office, the next person with seniority is Laura, and she's been here just over a year, 14 months. Okay, so you only have 14 months of longevity in that office. And now we're adding this COVID-19 stuff, and we keep putting this emphasis on that, and that's just the way it is. But we have this whole onslaught now of things that we have to get done just because of COVID-19. Right? I mean, we have to clean regularly, we have to monitor the situation on the community's behalf. Today I spent a good portion of my time, frankly, doing what Robert should be doing in this budget. And because I was doing that and not the work I would like to be doing, I didn't get a mandate out to the staff telling them that they need to wear masks when they're closer than 6 feet with the general public, and that we aren't going to allow the general public into the main office spaces because COVID-19 is spreading through the community. And so I didn't get that done. Now I have to do it. Oh, I can't do it tomorrow because tomorrow I promised our defense attorneys in the Tribency case 12 different responses that are due by Thursday. See how this is piling up? I mean, now I'm on this long tangent and I need to get off the soapbox, but I really want to do the best I can to paint a picture for you as to why we're asking. This is not a wish list, respectfully, Mr. Michelson. This is nowhere near a wish list. If you saw the wish list, you'd have a stroke. This is just to get the job done for the community. We are not a little sleepy town. We're booming. We have growth. We expected businesses to shut down and that we would see probably the worst economics that Stevensville's probably seen in decades. And we're seeing the opposite. We're experiencing that. And that's not to say businesses haven't closed and that there won't be businesses that will close, but we're seeing growth in terms of business. And on a daily basis, we're seeing businesses inquire about Stevensville. So there's a ton of opportunity for us to move forward on and to leverage. And because of our responsible financial management, we're able to seize those opportunities tonight. And I appreciate that this is overwhelming, and that's why there's 2 weeks before you're going to see budget, right? The budget's not coming to you tomorrow night or Thursday night. You're getting this information tonight so that you can hear the public's comment in 2 weeks at the budget hearing and then make a decision as to what you want to do with your budget at that meeting. So it's not all or nothing tonight. By no means is what I'm implying. So, Mr. Michelson.
I guess I won't say nothing. Thank you. I was going to say something, but I lost my train of thought.
Sure. There's one thing in the document before, one moment, just while I'm thinking of it. Fiscal year 2021, changes in fund balance, working capital. I think it's the page labeled 23 at the bottom. I need to update that. In our haste to get this absolutely completed, the table didn't update. That's last year's table, not this year's table. We updated the title, but we didn't drag the table over from the other window and plop it into this one. So just the final document that gets published online for the public's consumption will have that corrected tomorrow. Mr. Vick, you had some comments.
Okay, my kind of similar argument as Ms. Devlin had. A lot of these other communities too, when I was looking around, they're not sandwiched in between two larger, very larger communities within a close proximity that they're having to compete with. I definitely support the matrix as presented. Ms. Devlin's proposal for mayoral salary. And my other reasoning is this. Because as we're able to be kind of set an example. Say, this is what a town of this size should expect out of a mayor. This is what a town of this size should pay a mayor. Kind of be that first stepping stone for the rest of the state, for the other 124 municipalities. We definitely put a heavy workload on the mayor's office. It's not, I'm not going to say Brandon, we put it on his office. And it's his responsibility to make sure all these projects get done, make sure that, you know, we get new businesses coming in, make sure businesses that are here are wanting to stay. And I mean, you look at what's going on right now, yeah, granted, yes, COVID-19, we might take a huge hit, but you look, we have a very large business moving out of Missoula that's coming right on the main street, two doors down from Morningstar Cafe. And then rumored in the building, or not the building, but the little area next door, is rumored for a production studio that's going in there. That right there is two very large growths that are coming to this town in the next year. And if that's something that we expect any mayor of this community to continue to help our community grow, and advertising that, we also need to attract applicants to run for office that are willing to work for that amount of money a month.
The other thing I'd like to speak to on the mayor's salary, and this was something that I think Ms. Holcomb mentioned, that there were other mayors out there that would take issue with the amount of money that you're going to pay your mayor. In fact, East Helena, same size as Stevensville, they pay their mayor a reasonable salary. I think it's roughly $46,000 a year.
That's correct.
Phillipsburg, much smaller community than we are, they pay their mayor roughly $30,000 a year. So there are two communities that have already kind of led the charge towards, and perhaps I've told this story before. When I went to the very first mayor's conference as the mayor of Stevensville, I had never been to the mayor's conference before. I'd never been a mayor. I went to the mayor's conference, and we went around the room and introduced ourselves. And I don't remember, we introduced ourselves, it was our name, our community, how long we had been in office, or when we were elected. And then there was another question, and somehow every response had something to do with their salary and not making enough money. That was the consensus in the room. And in fact, when the mayor of Phillipsburg told everyone how much he was making, and remember, Phillipsburg is a very small community, hardly 1,000 people, right? Afterwards, during social hour, we all went to him and said, how did you make that happen, and how do we get it done in our communities? So I don't necessarily buy that the other mayors are going to use Stevensville as a laughing stock to say, oh my gosh, you pay your mayor way too much money. I think that's, if that is the case from any mayors, and I happen to know most of them very well, and on some level, that isn't the case. You know, it may be envy that sparks those kinds of remarks, but we know, as we fill these positions, we know what it takes to do the job, the longer we're in it. I've been willing, I guess it's been very abundantly clear over the last 2.5 years, yes, I think the position is worth something, and that's been a goal of mine. That's why I've asked, but you notice I didn't ask for a raise in this other than that up to $1,700. I didn't ask for the full $30,000 that I've asked for in past years. So, but the reason I've been asking for that raise, you guys, is because it's been a goal of mine to get the position up to a level so that when the day comes that I don't fill it, you're compensating that person fairly and that they're not getting burned out, and we can stop the turnover in the mayor's office and actually put a little bit of longevity where somebody can last 4 years without taking a thrashing from half of the community and feeling value for the work that they do. Here's another example. When the streets get plowed really well, who do we hear praise from at the podium? Or who do people praise at the podium? George, right? George and Eddie, thank you so much for plowing our streets. It looks great. The streets are safe. Thank you for getting the cemeteries plowed. The parks look fantastic. You guys are doing a great job. But the very moment that those things don't happen, who gets chastised? It's the mayor's fault the street didn't get sanded. It's the mayor's fault the cemeteries look like crap. And that's fine. That's part of the gig. I'm not arguing that that's not how, you know, that's kind of circle of life to some degree. But you have to ask yourself, well, if it's the mayor's fault the cemetery didn't get mowed and it looks like crap, then why is that? Is it because the mayor doesn't have the time or isn't being compensated to oversee and make sure that that department gets it done? Right? Because if you're only paying him $10,000 a year, he or she, $10,000 a year, and they only commit 10 hours a week to the position, well, there's not enough time in the week to fully make sure that the boys are on point and trim the hedges, right? So consider that as well. I mean, we're going down this rabbit hole, but I think this is a very healthy and a very important conversation we're having. I don't disagree with that. Absolutely. Turn your microphone on, though. Okay.
I've been here about 10 and a half months now, and
here, use mine.
In the course of
don't give it COVID
that time, I've watched the mayor work 40 plus hours a week every week, and it's the position he works, and it could be anybody. But if you take a person and you put him in that position and you want him, say, a four hour week job, that's not the job. We would be severely undermanned in the office. It wasn't someone there for 40 hours a week. He not only does what the mayor does, but he also backfills anybody of the employees because he had most of the jobs there. The longevity there is very beneficial for all of us that work there. But once again, he pulls his weight in every aspect of the job. And so if something happened and he got hit by a car and we got a new mayor, we're going to do, say, 4 hours a week, we would have to hire somebody else. We would not be able to take the workload and put it on anybody else, even the people we're asking to hire right now. It's just too much. And no one would do it. No one would do it. And I've told him before, I don't know how he does it. For that little pay and that much work is ridiculous. There's no one here, no one in this room would do it. So, and like I said, he comes in, he knows the job, he knows our jobs, he does the work. He gets work done. It wouldn't get done. So any work that gets kind of that we can't do, that when we get overburdened, he can step in, and he has stepped in and help fill that position and get the work done. So it's not above him to do any of the work here. Concludes some of the sidewalk. So that's my piece on that. 10 and a half months of watching it, I wouldn't have done it.
Mr. Michelson.
Back to my concern is the overall wages of everybody. We're given, and I know we've been through this two or three times about the matrix, bringing everybody's wages up to par. But everything I hear on the streets in my ward tells me there's nobody working. Everybody's scared of what the future is. And we're doing this healthier raises, a squad car, a building over there, and on and on. And Brandon has nothing to do with your wage at all. I'm going on all the wages. And I think we should just do a 3% because I work for the town of Stevensville. I mean, I work for the people of Stevensville. They voted me in, and I have to answer to each and every one of them in my ward. And if this passes the way it is, we're all going to be skirting the side streets. Thank you.
Ms. Devlin.
I hear the exact same opposite of that, Mr. Michelson, from my ward as well as your ward. So I'll answer those with you. You're not alone. But we're hearing different, you know, and that's where we have to make the best decision because we're hearing different things from, and we should. There are different people that are talking to us. We should. But I think it's also very important that I take feedback from what you're saying from the people that you hear, and you take feedback from what I'm saying from the people that I hear. If we're both being told the opposite, we have to somehow speak for both parties.
You're in a richer section than I am, though.
Well, I don't know about that.
I don't know. I mean, respectfully, Mr. Mikkelsen, I mean, we live five doors apart, and I think have very different views on this subject. Of course, with the exception of the audience, there's not a single person in this room that doesn't work for the public to some degree. I mean, that's why we're having these conversations, is on behalf of our citizens and of our neighbors. So I don't think we should discredit that, you know, you're the only one here that's speaking on behalf of the people of Ward 2. There's another representative of Ward 2, and there's a representative at large, all sitting at the table.
And to be honest, what I hear I live, 2 yards away from you, really, across the street and 2 yards on the hardest street in all of Stevensville, Barber Street. But the thing is, I'm hearing a lot of the people that I talk to are telling me that they think that our staff is underpaid, and that we would get better quality applicants in the future if we put out that we pay a little bit better. We're not saying to pay the same wage as Missoula or Hamilton in some cases. We're just looking to say, you know what? If you live in Stevensville, live in the surrounding area, why not be able to work here instead of commuting? Is really an example that we would like to set.
The other point I'd make too is that this budget does create a couple of jobs. And it seems, there's been kind of a negative connotation around that idea that we're adding staff to the town of Stevensville. If there are people out there who need work and they live in our community and they want to work, we should employ them. We can clearly afford to do it. Why not help create jobs for the community? Why not initiate that and take that initiative? And if it's one or two people or three people we help out, great. COVID, the other piece I'd highlight, we took into account COVID. Mr. Michael, if you need to stand up, please don't hesitate. I mean, if you need to move or something, and if you're in pain.
I got a cramp in my leg.
If you need to walk around, you're welcome to. The budget takes into account revenue losses. If you look at the pool revenue, for example, what we would normally estimate at $20,000 to $25,000 in revenue, we've cut back to $10,000, fully understanding that we're closing the pool a month early, and we don't know what will happen next year. So we've taken a lot of those things into account. We've taken into account that certain fees may be reduced because of the impacts of COVID-19. But the other piece of COVID-19 is that it's kind of provided a windfall for Stevensville specifically, where we were in a very sound, healthy position when this pandemic hit, in terms of having enough reserves that if push came to shove and we didn't have enough revenue to meet our obligations, we had plenty of reserves to do it. We didn't even touch our reserves, obviously. That in mind, the CARES Act is still reimbursing us for our police officers. In fact, when Robert submitted the CARES application, he deducted vacation and sick leave that James had used, that an employee had used. We refrain from using names. That a police officer had used. He used sick and vacation leave during the reimbursement period. Robert deducted that from the request, thinking, well, he had the sick and vacation leave anyway. Why would we ask CARES to reimburse that? They called and asked why we didn't include it. So we've got a check coming, and we have 3 more quarters of payments to submit to CARES. And then they've committed to paying us. They're paying for the salaries and wages in the fire department. They're paying for salaries and wages in the police department and any other COVID-related expenses. In fact, we budgeted for computers for the council, knowing that COVID-19 is going to force you to have a webcam. We know that's coming. It's inevitable. So we're buying you computers sooner rather than later, with CARES funding, so that you can adequately govern the city during a pandemic, because that was one area we were weak in before. So somehow we got completely sidetracked, but there's my piece on some of the points that have been made. The fire chief would like to make a comment.
Shall I use a microphone?
If you can speak loudly from there, then that microphone will hear you.
Okay, so, I know I came into the meeting late, sorry. I understand the salaries, I understand the need. I think that the office staff that we currently have in the office is doing us a great job. I've seen multiple different people fill those chairs over the years, and it's not been to the level that it is currently today. Everything that's going on in there, I feel they're doing a stellar job. Any request, anything that I need of them is answered and taken care of in a very timely and professional manner. Kudos to the staff. With that said, I have a little bit of indigestion and heartburn sitting here listening to a capital improvement item that I've been forward with for 2 years now, not being considered, well, it's being considered, but not necessarily being funded. However, at this 11th hour of the budget process, we now have a new office space that was available since late last fall, early this spring, when Highway Patrol moved out. Now all of a sudden, hey, well, we should do this, so we're going to do that. We have another employee coming on staff, supposedly has been presented again tonight. And yeah, it's all within the budget, it all balances out and all that stuff, and that's all good. And yeah, we probably need those things, but it's the process that I have a little bit of heartburn with tonight. In March, I was, as a department head and other department heads, we were tasked with coming up with our preliminary budget. What do you need? You need to fill it out. You need to put this together. So we did, and we have, and we've been meeting the timely deadlines. But now all of a sudden, I hear tonight, oh, well, this is a new deal. Oh, this is a new position. Oh, and now we can do this too. But these other things that department heads have put together, put on the table, according to the plan, well, we're looking for other alternative ways to fund that and make that happen. That's a bit of a grind. That's a bit of a hard pill. And I get it. Everything is valuable. Everything needs to get done. We can't do it all. We've got to have some give and take in here. But I'm sure staff will attest to the give and take and the frugality in which the department heads operate from year to year to year to year to year. We wouldn't have the cash flow unexpended amount from last year coming forward that we have this year if the department heads didn't do that and didn't participate like that. So when we come forward with a project that needs to be done, be it a storage building or a garage door larger or whatever that project is, and it's like, well, we're going to try and do it, but we put these things in other priority places over the top of that that have come in at the 11th hour, man, that's a hard one to look at and sit back and just take.
Ms. Devlin.
That does go back to what I said when I was going over my things, that we do have department heads that we have in place that if we don't trust what they're coming forward and asking for, we shouldn't have them in those places. They don't ask for things that they don't need. They don't ask for extravagant things. I think if they put it on the list, we have a responsibility to figure out a way to fulfill those. That's part of their job. That's part of our job. Thank you for saying that. That's what I was saying earlier. Mm-hmm. We have a duty to our department heads.
Chief.
To that, I understand that you guys are still looking for ways to fund the other projects. I understand that. But I guess in my mind, maybe we need to be looking for ways to fund moving into the other building, to fund the other position over the items that were already on the list.
Any further council input? Mr. Bick? I can see the wheels churning, so
yeah.
I didn't want to cut you off.
They're a little slow. I do agree with Mr. Motley there that the fire department definitely does need that bay expansion done. And I really want us to try to find a way to make that a top priority. I also understand the thing on the pool with where if we do way too much on improvements, we're going to be spending a lot of money to bring it up to code. But as it sits right now, the pool honestly is looking to be like a reverse boat, where a boat is a hole in the water that you put all your money in. This pool is being a hole in the land that we're putting all of our money in.
We're saving on irrigation next to the pool.
I know.
That helps.
But
it's very wet.
But I mean, and the thing is, and I know you three really haven't really come around to the fire department in the time that I was really active on there. But I'd be more than happy to show you guys the damage to that bay that he's wanting extended that I did with an ambulance. And we're talking about an ambulance. It's only 4 inches wider than a regular pickup truck. And that was me pulling out. That wasn't backing back in. And I even took a mirror off that ambulance as well myself, doing that, and then tried to put it back on with flex tape. But the fact of the matter is that is a project that needs to get done so that we can get our larger apparatuses over to that side, because there's more room in that bay as long as we have the larger door size.
Any further remarks from council? Is there any comment on the budget from the audience? Just speak loud enough that the camera can pick you up. State your name and address, please, for the
Sherry
record.
Sherry Beach, 105 Winslet Avenue. I guess the one thing that kind of stands out to me as I, have heard, comments in budget meetings or discussions about what's going to be on the budget. I bought my house here back in 2007. And as you drive up and down the streets, you see the condition of some of the things in our town that are really needing attention and have need. I mean, that was 13 years ago, over 13 years ago. There are sidewalks that are buckled because of tree roots or whatever the case might be. My daughter has rode down these sidewalks and fell because of the disrepair that these things are in. I feel like it's wise to take care of what we have. And I understand your focus seems to be more on, let's make it look really pretty. Let's attract people to our town so that it will grow and we'll have all these new people coming and businesses, and we want it bigger and bigger. I love a small town. I love living in a small town. That doesn't mean I'm opposed to growth. But I think that in making wise decisions with the finances of this town, it's important that we take care of what we have. This is a primary example. You guys have talked about, I don't remember who it was last week, talked about, putting a splash deck in at this park. I mean, I would think that we would want to start with something maybe a little cheaper, like playground equipment, so that kids will actually want to come play at that park. Instead of doing those things that may be costly and new, look at taking care of what we have existing and fixing the things. Even though it's not Main Street, it's not the first thing that people see when they drive into town, but the people that live here that want to enjoy what we have and to take care of what we have, think that that's a priority. It should be a priority. Taking care of, our fire department folks and buildings that pertain to that and keeping them in good repair should be a top priority over other things, I'll just say that really shouldn't be considered a higher priority than something along that line. Repairing sidewalks or taking care of things that are already in this town that we can look around and see need to be fixed. We should be addressing that. You're saying we have all of this money, so instead of spending that money and saying, we can afford this and we can afford this new thing and this new thing, how about we use some of those funds to take care of what we've already got here that needs to be taken care of?
Any further remarks?
Okay.
I will highlight to that point, just so we're clear, and you'll of course see this in the document, but there's $2.3 million in capital expenditures that do the very things that have just been highlighted, in that taking care of what we have, taking care of replacing the pavement at the airport. There's $20,000 in the budget for sidewalk replacements. There's nearly $200,000 for road repairs in this year's capital improvement budget. So we don't necessarily want to put all of our focus in one area of town or just onto Main Street. We do want to improve and take care of the things we have, and partner with civic organizations like the Civic Club and other groups in the community who want to help fund projects in our park and recreation facilities. So just to touch on that point, we did propose a number of new initiatives, if you will, that are additions to the service, right? There's an expanded level of service aspect to that. But we are also, like I said, and I realize a good portion of that is the funding from the airport, but that is still infrastructure improvement nonetheless. And so we do have that that $2.3 million setting aside to be spent on those infrastructure improvements and taking care of what we have. So maybe it includes some water system improvements as well. So with that, if there's nothing further from council, we'll call it a night. Thanks for your time.